For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zengate, and I'm very pleased to welcome our guest speaker tonight, Jindo Cohen, who is lives in Japan but teaches internationally online and teaches Zazen and Dogen and all the good stuff. So, Jindo, thank you for coming all the way to Chicago to speak to us.
Well, hello, everybody, and a few familiar faces, and some very familiar faces. That's my sister in the corner over there. Hi, sis. It's kind of intimidating giving a Dharma talk in front of your sister, because she remembers me when I used to be on a tricycle, and she knows all the secrets, so shh. It is an honor for me to be here. This is something of a pilgrimage for me. I'm in the beginning of a train trip I'm taking to meet many of our Sangha members that are scattered around the United States. As Taigen said, we're rather an internet-connected Sangha. So this is the beginning of my trip, and it is an honor and pilgrimage to be here because, the title of this talk is called Polishing, Non-Polishing. I came very close to calling it Apple Polishing for Taigen. Sorry, Taigu's my partner at Tree Leaf. Because some of Taigen's writings have been the most influential on my practice and hopefully what I'm going to be expressing today. His writings on Dogen and the Lotus Sutra opened my eyes to Dogen's writing style in a way I had never seen before. I understood Dogen, as I was describing, as the jazz man who took traditional Zen and Buddhist Mahayana teachings and bent them around and twisted them and opened them up like a good jazz musician playing a solo. And this came from Taigen's writing for me. Now, this is a little intimidating, too, because, as I said, this is an interpretation I'm giving that I believe is inspired by Taigen, but Taigen is sitting next to me, and he could perhaps tell me I'm all wrong, which is, okay, too, because in the Zen way, even if you get it wrong, you got to make it your own. So this is what I'm selling. This is my own thing, and I'm sticking with it, even if it's wrong. But tell me later if I... Okay? After today. The talk is called Practice Enlightenment for Practical People Just Trying to Pay the Light Bill. And like many people in the Western Zen world, what I'm trying to do is take some of these teachings from ancient China, from Dogen in the 13th century, and make them viable and useful for people living in the city of Chicago. And the rest of this busy, crazy, sometimes frustrating world, what does this have to do with our lives? Most of the members of my Sangha, even a lot of the, well, my own teacher and myself, we're working people. I got two kids. I got a 14-year-old. I got a 7-year-old. I work a job 9 to 5. I'm a translator of Japanese, though not to the... I'm still learning every day. And I also love Zazen. It saved my life because, as my sister might tell you, when I was 14 years old, I was kind of a little bit of a confused. And that continued my teenage years until I was 25. I wasn't sure who I was. I wasn't sure what this life was about. I was in graduate school, didn't know where I was going. I was stressed out, worried about things that might happen tomorrow, regretting things that happened yesterday. And somebody said, why don't you come and face a wall and just sit? And the silence, the lack of judgment was so very different from anything else I'd known. So that was 30 years ago, and I've been continuing this practice ever since. Tigan was very kind. He said, oh, you're 57, you're just a kid. Well, yeah, it's all relative, I guess. But now, the talk I'm going to be giving today is based on one of Tigan's great writings, which is Zazen as Enactment Ritual. And I know a lot of you are the regulars here, some new folks, I understand. But if you have not read this piece, this is, as far as I'm concerned, this one piece is the key to Zazen that is not, with all due respect to all the wonderful Zen teachers who present Zazen in their different ways, some of the points expressed in this article need to be emphasized more. So if you have not read it, do. I'm going to read, I believe this is the first paragraph. At least it's the first paragraph I printed here. Buddhist meditation has commonly been considered an instrumental technique aimed at obtaining a heightened mental or spiritual state, or even as a method for inducing some dramatic enlightenment experience. But in some branches of the Zen tradition, Zazen, Zen-seated meditation, has been seen not as a means to attaining some result, but as a ritual enactment and expression of awakened awareness. This alternate, historically significant approach to Zen meditation and practice has been as a ceremonial ritual expression whose transformative quality is not based on stages of attainment or meditative practice. And here is how I take that to mean. Some people think that we sit, well, many people sit just to find some peace. You breathe, the body relaxes, the muscles relax. We find some peace. That's good. That's a lot of what is called the mindfulness movement these days. People are trying to do that. And some people think that if they do this long enough, something will open up and everything will become clear. You know, that's actually true. But when you hear, not necessarily by going about it in the way you expect. If you sit in the knowledge, and I don't mean intellectual knowledge, I mean a subtle sense, a faith, a trust in the bones, that just sitting itself is the one thing to do in the whole, I'm going to say it, the whole universe in that moment, the one place to go, the one action, with nothing lacking, nothing to add, just sitting itself, you taste a completion and a wholeness that changes everything. Why? It's very simple. And this is where we can actually bring this out into life, as far as I'm concerned. We live in a world where we don't know how to sit still and to be complete. We get up in the morning, and the first thing we do is start thinking of all the things we need to do that day. The places we need to go, the people we need to meet, the things in our life we need to fix, the thing that happened yesterday that still bothers us, the other thing we hope becomes true, the thing a year from now that we're working towards, the feeling of maybe lack in our own selves of who we may think we are. How precious just to sit for a certain time and put that all aside. There is nothing after. There is nothing before. There is nothing to add or take away. Just let the sitting sit. Now, in this paper, Tigan tells some traditional old stories as retold by Dogen. And I've picked a couple here that I hope make this point a little clearer. One is about polishing the tile. For studying the way, this is Dogen's words, for studying the way, the established means of investigation is pursuit of the way in seated meditation. The essential point that marks this investigation is the understanding that there is a practice of a Buddha that does not seek to make a Buddha. Since the practice of a Buddha is not to make a Buddha, it is the realization of the koan. For me, the word Buddha here represents that which is not lacking and is the fullness and wholeness and completion of whatever is holding all this together. And we sit with the awareness that just sitting is the manifestation of this wholeness, this completion, this nothing lacking, this allowing of what is. Now, in the story of the tile, Mazu was sitting, Zazen, and his teacher Nanwe asked him about his intention in Zazen. Mazu replied that he intended to make a Buddha. He wanted to become Buddha. He wanted to become this perfection and wholeness. Nanwe took a tile, you know, just a rough, like a roof tile, and began polishing it on a rock. When Mazu asked what he was doing, you can't make a mirror from a rock. That's the punchline I'm going to get to. Nanwe replied that he was polishing a tile to make a mirror. When Nanwe perplexedly asked how this was possible, Nanwe responded, "So how can you make a Buddha through Zazen?" You are already Buddha. There is nothing to make. But I'm going to get to the second part of the story where you make it every second. That's one thing we're going to get to. But trust me, folks, you are already this grand wholeness, completion, flawlessness, nothing lacking, nothing to add or take away. And your Zazen cannot make you this because this is what already is. But the Zazen itself is the manifestation of this. Sitting is our nothing flowing but this, nothing lacking but this, the flawlessness of this, the no place else to go, the nothing more that needs to be done in this moment but this. How rare is that in our lives these days? We sit like this because this is how a Buddha sits. The sitting is that Buddha sitting. We are that Buddha sitting. Now, of course, you watch the breath. You let the thoughts go. It's a goalless sitting, we say. But some people say that the goallessness means an aimless sitting. There's no point. You just sit. Just breathe. And that's good. But we also just sit because this is the flawless Buddha's sitting. Again, why is that important? Because I get up and I leave here, and my brother-in-law over there starts complaining about the traffic. And my 7-year-old runs around my sister's house. I'm worried all the time she's going to break something. And I've got work to do. I'm still on Japan time. I have to check to see how my little translation project is going. And I get back to it. I have places to go and people to see. And I'm judging the crazy political situation in the world, all the mess that's going on. But when I get up from the cushion is it possible at the same time to bring with you a little of that, not a little, all of that completion, that flawlessness, that nothing lacking, even as I go back into my life where many things are lacking and there are many problems to fix. I sometimes describe this as a brilliant way of seeing the world out of two eyes. This is the human eye. Most of us just see life this way. Oh, there are problems. Oh, I love that. Oh, I hate that. This is okay. Oh, I got to do this. Oh, this other thing. What's going on in Washington? What if there's a war with North Korea? Oh, my! I live in Japan. This is a concern. I mean, believe me, you want to know something? My joke is that I'm of a Jewish background. One of the reasons Jewish people got into Zen is because all we're doing is we're worried about everything all the time. And I'm thinking about the future and the past and all. And then somebody says, stop worrying. Just, it's okay. And we go, this is good. This is good. Well, mostly we see life out of this way. Many of us come to Zen because there was something lacking, something bothering us. We're trying to fill some hole, so we're here. There's some lack of peace in us we're looking for. Okay, that's seeing out of this. And then we find, shikantaza. Nothing's lacking. All is complete and whole. Nothing to fix. It's okay. I mean, the big Buddha, okay. And then when we get up, is it possible to open both eyes at once and see the world both ways at once with many problems? And we need to fix them in this world. Tigan knows that. Many problems, global warming, social problems, personal problems in our life. But at the same time, nothing to fix, but many things to fix, but nothing to fix, and it all comes together like two hands in Gassho. And the two eyes become a clarity, like we see with two eyes, that becomes the one clarity of a Buddha's eye. Seeing this crazy world of samsara, that's the world we live in, you know, messed up problems, the mud, the confusion of the life, but seeing it also as nirvana. As one, samsara is nirvana. Nirvana is precisely samsara. And the two together. Why is this important? Well, I'll take 101 examples. How am I doing? Okay? Yeah. So, you know, Tigan and I, we're kind of concerned about the world a little bit. I've got a friend who's a social worker. He's one of our Tree Leaf members, and he's in Africa now giving shots and medical care to kids in, I believe, Swaziland. And he says it's tough because they do their medical thing and they can just push the kids out again. And it's frustrating. But he's out there every day doing his service. And he sees the other social workers around him and medical personnel sometimes burning out because it's tough work and it's frustrating and they can't fix everything they want to fix. And all the money they throw at problems, it doesn't help. But yet they go there every day. From this practice, somehow he knows, he sits, there's nothing to fix. There's something that holds all the broken pieces of life into a clear mirror. As if life was shattered glass pieces. And when you sit zazen, it comes together as a clear mirror. It's one of the traditional images in zazen, where what's ever reflected in the mirror, the beautiful, the ugly, is beyond judgment. And that gives him the power and strength to go out and fix all the craziness. This peace and the craziness somehow allow him to come together like that. Now, I tell people, you know, when you sit zazen in a zendo, mine is a lot noisier than yours, boy. We got helicopters from the military base flying over sometimes, and I got trucks sometimes passing. And so the people are sitting, and a bird is singing, and tree, and it's perfect zazen. The temperature is perfect. And then the helicopter comes, or the truck, vroom. And the people say, it's disturbing my zazen. It is impossible to have disturbance in shikantaza. You're inside being disturbed. The helicopter is not disturbing. Your reaction to the helicopter. So when we sit, I often say, you know, the bird sings like the bird, the helicopter sings like the helicopter. Rainy days, sometimes if we're having a picnic, we hate them. But if you're a farmer, you like them. But we like a sunny day if we're having a picnic, but too much sun, the farmer doesn't like. But we say, rainy days are just rainy. Sunny days, just sunny. Helicopters, just helicopters, and birds, just birds. Why? This is where we take it off the cushion. Because we also like being young. You know, dukkha, the Buddha's definition of suffering was to grow old. We like being young. We don't want to get old. We like being healthy. We don't want to get sick. We like to things in the world with our family, our relatives. I got nice relatives, but, you know, most of them. But sometimes, you know, problems in the family. We don't like that. Things we, when we win, we like that. Rain is just rain. Sun is just sun. Something about this practice, sitting in the wholeness of zazen, also teaches us, when you're young, just young. When you're old, just old. Healthy, just healthy. Sick, just sick. When we lose someone we love, maybe through a broken relationship or death, that is just what it is too. Somehow the flawless wholeness sweeps all that in. To give you a story, that doesn't mean when I said, oh, you just accept being sick, that's out of this eye. My friend, who was a member of our Sangha, had chemotherapy. And let's just say, am I still good? Let's just say out of this eye, she fought the good fight. She took her chemotherapy. She didn't want to be sick. She could fight the challenge, but at the same time, out of this eye, there was nothing to fight. Just what it was. We need this in this world because we can fix problems. We need to make this world better. I love this civilization where we're working to build and make things better. But at the same time, we need to reorient our priorities to know there's a contentment there. We can fight the good fight, like my friend who took her medicine, and yet be at peace and accept how things are. A relative who's an alcoholic, you can accept that, yet get him treatment. Your house is burned down. You can accept that here. But on the other hand, you need to live. You need to go to work and have a safe place to stay. We can, at the same time, as we try to make this world better, we can accept. And that's what, to me, the next section works out. Another great story that Taigen tells of the raft. This practice, Dogen spoke of practice enlightenment. Dogen states that some people even practice like having crossed over a great ocean on a raft, thinking that upon crossing the ocean, one should discard the raft. The zazen of our Buddha ancestors is not like this, but is simply Buddha's practice. Also, polishing the tile. People thinking that polishing the tile makes a mirror. Zazen makes Buddha. The act of polishing ourself is what makes this real. Not polishing. The act of polishing itself is what makes this real. We realize this practice, the wholeness and completion. That's one form of realization. But we also realize it by how we live. Our words, our thoughts, and our acts. If you choose or fall into the trap of being angry and divisive and jealous and excessively attached and greedy, you're splitting the world. You're taking that beautiful whole mirror and you are creating all the broken pieces on the ground. but through this beautiful practice, if we learn each moment, in each choice, in each day, in each action, instead of the anger, instead of the divisive thinking, instead of the fighting and the jealousy, if we learn to choose the generosity, the giving, the peace, the acceptance, the lack of division, then the broken mirror pieces come together. Every word, every thought, every action of our day is making this practice. Now, this is what they taught in the monastery. People think that Dogen only taught Zazen. No, as Taigen's writings, like Eihei Koroku and Eihei Shingi, showed me most clearly, mostly Eihei Shingi. Everything in the monastery was kind of a Zazen in its wider meaning. We sit every day to remember this, just sit on the cushion. But getting up from the cushion, cooking in the kitchen, cleaning the floors, taking care of the other monks, the sick monks, doing the accounting in the... You had a large section of the book about the accounting. Taking care of the accounting, Dogen wrote about it as if it was a sacred action, because it was. Going to the bathroom, taking a bath, using the toilet. Dogen, it's a ritual. It is all Zazen in its wider meaning, we say. And so that is for monks in a monastery, but how about you? Being in the office, putting staples in this paper. Bow to your stapler. It's gorgeous. The whole universe is here and has somehow allowed you to be here alive doing this. Taking care of the baby diaper. Changing a flat tire. It's all a sacred ritual to me now. Our practice, this is a challenge that we in the modern Western Zen world face, to take this from the monastery and to make all this our monastery. And we can. The Buddha historically never said it's impossible. He just said it's hard. There's a famous quote from the Buddha, and he said, living in the dusty world, it is, what's the quote, hard or just impossible? No, he didn't say impossible. He said difficult. Thus, you should become a monk. It is. That's the easy way. But this is a good way too. This is the hard practice. It's all our practice. When you have a choice in the office or with your family to give up for a moment the anger, that's your practice. That's putting the broken pieces of the mirror together. That, I believe, is our Zazen in the wider meaning, as Taigen is writing about here, I believe. He's going to tell me later if I got it all wrong. I'm going to give you a silly story, but this is one of those moments when I realized how practical this practice is. Same thing happened to me about 15 years separate. I was late, I was dressed kind of nice, and it started raining. I got a flat tire. First time, I was my normal, hadn't been practicing very long self. I got out. I'm getting soaking wet. I'm going to be late. The tire. I'm angry. I think I kicked the tire, hurt my foot. Getting soaking wet. There's no cell phones in those days. So I changed the tire. I got grease all over me. I'm mad at the tire, and I drive like crazy, and I get where I'm going, and life is just unjust. Okay? About 15 years later, I'm going, nice dressed, it starts raining, blah, 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 blah. Same tire, by the way, I think it was the right front. And I get out of the car. I'm getting soaking wet. I'm going to be late. What is time? I changed the tire. Took me just as long. Maybe I did it faster because I wasn't spending all my time kicking it. I got to where I was going, soaking wet, covered in grease. I told the guy what happened. He laughed. I think it went very well, you know. It was a sacred ritual. And I learned that we have many flat tires in life. Boy, I bet you got your flat tires. I'm not talking about real flat tires. I'm talking about the stuff in your life. You can still deal with them. We can still fix them. But we can bring this to that. See, there's my flat tire. Paper, I want it to stay on. It won't stay on. Everything does, nothing perfectly goes the way you want. The Buddha discovered this. And the Buddha never found a way to fix all the problems in life. He said, suffering is growing old, getting sick, dying. Guess what? He got old, he got sick, and he's dead. Never found a cure. There were wars going on in India. They had their own problems. Crazy kings and crazy system and injustice. He couldn't fix it all. But what he found a way was to see through it. And maybe in that time, the Buddha, the early Buddhist teaching said, we have to get away from it. And you have to detach a little bit. That's to find the peace. And then it came to China. And China, Chinese culture was a little more worldly. And they said, no, we're about this life here, but we're still in a monastic setting. In those days, there was no choice. Outside, you couldn't find out about Buddhism. You couldn't study Buddhism. You had to pretty much be in a monastery if you wanted to do it. So they went to the monastery, but they taught a very worldly teaching inside the monastery. Now, for the first time in the 21st century, we truly have the ability to bring these wise teachings out, and it's going to be tough, and it's going to be the richest of all teaching, because this is where, not to make my flat tire joke, but the rubber meets the road. Shikantaza, sitting on the cushion, is necessary each day, because here we sit with not one thing lacking, not one more. This is Buddha sitting. This is the sacred mirror. And we get up and we deal with all life's mess. And we realize it's just the same. Let's fix this world. That would make Taigen happy. We got a long way to go. But having that mind of wholeness will help us. We'll be less greedy. We need to be less greedy in this world. Why are we spending so much money on sports shoes? I come here from Japan. Japan, you turn the TV on, they're selling you this thing, selling you. You need this, you need that. I come here to America, same thing, it's just in English. Selling. What do I need all this stuff? I got all this stuff too. I got stuff. We need to reduce the greed. Reduce our consumption. We need to be more satisfied. These teachings have practical purposes. We need to know peace so we stop fighting with each other, not only country to country, but everyone in this country, back in Japan, everybody's fighting with each other. We need to put it down and sit in the wholeness of it all. Anyway, I think you got the basic idea of what I'm trying to say. So I just want to say this was really rough. I feel sitting next to him, if Taigen, you know, most of you know he's a big Bob Dylan fan. If Taigen got called up to, like, play, you know, hang out with Bob Dylan, you know, he'd probably feel like I feel right now sitting next to him. He's the Bob Dylan of Zen, you know. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, you gave it away. Next week I'm planning to do Bodhisattva teachings from Bob Dylan. So thanks for that preview. Thanks for your talk, and we have a little bit of time, and if anyone has questions or comments on Dogen or Zazen or this eye or that eye or whatever, please
just feel free. Don't ask me about the Cubs. I have no idea.
What Cubs? Comments, questions, responses.
One thing with your introduction is Zazen. It's a working man, Zazen. besides bowing to the state work, what other practices can we do in the workplace that sort of help keep us centered, or at least not go off the path that when we come back, it's like, oh, that's it. You've already lost some of your path.
Well, I think in your own work, you can make your own. You know, being in a monastery actually is kind of a frustrating thing. It's a bunch of guys living in closed spaces, and you think you go to a monastery and it's all about a bunch of, you know, beautiful Buddhas all together living in harmony. And what it is a bunch of, usually a bunch of mixed up people who are in the monastery because, you know, their own personalities, and there's just like your office, there's the guy who drives you crazy, and the, right? So a lot of the social setting of the monastery would be human relations. Well, when you're in the office, dealing with other people, the person who drives you crazy, the deal you were working on so hard, the project that went, psh, it's my flat tire. Your coffee every morning that you just grab as you sit down. Just be grateful. Take a moment. It's a tea ceremony. You can make. Think about it. You design. You know, rituals, someone made them at some point. Everything we're doing with you grab with the right hand and put the incense. Someone planned this out. Please plan out your own. And you've been doing this practice long enough. You make your own temple ritual where you work and see what you can do. That's my answer. Thank you. Thank you. Nothing, sis?
Comments, questions, responses?
When I have difficulties at work, I often stop and ask myself, you know, what's a sweetheart like you doing in a dump like this? But it seems like there's a realm of optimal frustration that you can deal with, you know, that where you can maybe kind of just open up just a tiny bit to that one thing, and then, you know, and then you just can't go any further right then. Maybe that'll come around another time, or I don't know. But you can do a little tiny bit of opening up, and then.
This is from my own life, because I have frustrations in my work and many things, but I honestly believe that you can feel peace and frustration all at once. Just another example, completely unrelated. I'll get back to what you said, but my mother died, and I felt grief. And I cried, and total peace at once. I don't know if that is the wrong, if that is not Buddhism and that is wrong, I'm going to keep it anyway, because that was exactly what I wanted all from this practice. I want to be a human being. I don't want to be a robot. I'm not a machine. I want to cry. My mother has died. Yet, there was nothing lacking. It was such peace. Now, I think you can bring that to everything, including the office. And I had someone call me one time and they said, should I leave my job? And sometimes people say, should I leave my wife? And I often say, listen, I handle questions about time and space, but I don't do relationships. That's really hard. I don't know if you should stay with your wife or you should leave. I don't know if you should stay in your job or you should leave. All I know is if you sit and allow it to be, then make a list of the pros and cons, then go back and sit some more, then tear up that list and make another list of pros and cons, and then sit and sit and sit. Maybe in your own heart you will find a way to make a decision. Should I stay or should I go? All Zen will tell you is this. If you stay, you are there. And if you go, you are there. If it turns out that going was a mistake, you're still there. Start again. That's all it can tell you. And at least that's how I deal with my decisions I have to make in work. I don't know if that was what you were asking.
Yes.
Is there a conversation about spiritual bypass?
Spiritual bypass, boy. That's a good one. I think spiritual bypass is very... I almost want to toss it to you. I think it's very possible, and we have to be very concerned about spiritual bypassing. In my understanding, means that if we have real emotional issues or problems in life, we kind of squash it down into our Zen and the calmness of it all, and we don't deal with them as we should. I have people come to our Sangha, for example, who have real issues. Sometimes we have war veterans come and they have panic disorders. We have people who are dealing with serious depression and other psychological issues. And I tell them I'm not a psychologist. And I also tell them Zen will not cure all that. As I often said, Zen will not fix your cancer or cure the common cold. You have cancer, you have to see the cancer doctor, like I said my friend did. And it's not going to cure your common cold, or it's not going to fix your flat tire. It maybe allow you to be one with your situation. But if you have issues, you need to get therapy and help. There's nothing about Zen practice that means that you just sit Zen and then you can't deal with your issues. The Zen and dealing with your personal issues should go hand in hand. And if you just do one, like I'm just going to be Zen and pretend that all my PTSD is going to just disappear, I think you're making a mistake. If you're saying I'm just an alcoholic and I'm going to sit Zen, the alcoholism will go away. No, it might be the peace of Zazen might help, but you should seek professional help with your issues. So if you have real issues, seek therapy, seek help, and if your counselor advises, hopefully the two should go together and one should help the other. And if you do that, there should not be bypassing, I think.
I agree with that. I'll just add that this is not a practice to escape from the world or your own problems or the world's problems, but we face the world to face ourselves and face the world, not to keep out our problems. But sometimes we need to take it slow and to take our time to face whatever we need to face. But we can't hide in our practice. Zazen will bring forth anyway. Zazen is not a